A new school year is underway for hundreds of thousands of kids in South Florida. A new year brings with it the potential of new learning, new skills, and new challenges. Are our kids learning what they need in order to compete in the global job market of the future? Education is vital for a growing economy. It provides new ideas, strong communities, and economic prosperity. I'm Tom Hudson. Coming up on the Sunshine Economy, getting schooled, public education in South Florida. Do teachers have what they need to get South Florida students prepared for tomorrow's economy? Common Core curriculum and the continued growth of charter schools provide new opportunities and questions about the business of education. It's ahead on the Sunshine Economy. Getting schooled, public education in South Florida, and it's next on WLRN. Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack, education correspondent with State Impact Florida.
It's the sounds of going back to school today, sharpening a pencil, the ruffle of paper, zipping up the backpack, heading out the door. Back to school today for hundreds of thousands of public school students across South Florida, their parents, guardians, bus drivers, aides, lunch servers, Sammy, principals, and of course, the teachers.
Two of the largest public school districts in the United States are here in South Florida. There are more than 600,000 students between Miami-Dade and Broward County Public Schools, with more than 40,000 teachers.
Yeah, education, Sammy, is vital to our economy, not only for those thousands of jobs it helps support, but for educating the students to fulfill the jobs of the future. You know, there's skepticism, though, among business leaders here in South Florida about our education system preparing students for the workforce of tomorrow.
What we could use is more training here.
They don't have any training.
We still find ourselves having to recruit nationally.
A lot of the talent that we have in Miami are imports.
The skill set is something that we're still teaching.
South Florida executives there, ranging in industries from manufacturing, fashion, hotels, hospitality, all Sammy heard right here on previous Sunshine Economy programs.
And that's where we begin our conversation with the leaders of Miami-Dade and Broward County Public School Districts, Superintendents Alberto Carvalho from Miami and Robert Runcie of Broward.
Superintendent Carvalho, how confident are you that today's students, as they go back to school today, will be prepared for tomorrow's economy?
I'm fairly confident if we do everything we should do to empower them to get to a point where they will be not only competitive, not only nationally competitive, but internationally competitive. It's all about college and career readiness. And I think the comments that we just heard, actually some of them are interesting. Just listening to the accents, it seems that that talent itself is imported. My talent is imported. And I think we have an interesting way of looking at the generation today and somehow assume, sometimes erroneously, that it is a lesser generation, that the generation that was prepared for yesterday's economy. What's happening is that the pace of and the evolution of the talent required has dramatically increased. And this is about training for a new economy. And through in Miami-Dade, and I know there are like efforts in Broward County, we are looking specifically at what the private sector is requiring in partnering with Chambers of Commerce and particularly with the Beacon Council, the economic arm of our county. We've identified and understand what the seven key industries that are going to be requiring a highly skilled workforce in Miami-Dade will be. And through the partnership, I've been at the table with the Beacon Council. I'm part of that committee. We have lined up preparatory programs beginning in middle school, continuing through high school seamlessly with a gateway to post-secondary training, both career technical as well as college and university, to ensure that the pathway leading to college and career readiness in those seven key industries is there for the benefit of our young men and women.
Superintendent Runcie, from the Broward County perspective, do you feel you have a seat at the table when it comes to private industry and the conversations that are being had about the workforce of the future?
Absolutely. I am a member of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance, a number of other associations that represent the business community, and we've been working very closely to ensure that we're preparing our students as closely as possible for the requirements of work in a 21st century hyper-connected global economy. I think one of the models that we've continued to migrate towards is partnering with various businesses, bringing them into our schools, working with our educators and post-secondary institutions to create project-based learning opportunities and begin to move our students into an era where they not only develop basic skills and comprehension, but they're also able to apply what they know to solve real-world problems.
Yeah, and that application really goes to the heart of this new curriculum strategy, the Common Core curriculum strategy, Sammy, that we're beginning to see continue to expand and implement this year.
Right, that's right. So we're going to be seeing more Common Core in the classroom. What does that actually look like? What should parents expect their kids to see?
Let's understand that the Common Core is not a top-down, federally mandated curriculum. It is a naturally embraced, independently embraced set of standards by states, governors, and commissions of education on the basis of best practices and standards that will enable our students to be college and career readiness and enter the workforce well-prepared. Miami-Dade, Broward, and the entire state of Florida, for the past couple of years, in K through second grade, the standard in Florida is Common Core standard.
Right. That's what was used in those younger classrooms.
Correct. This coming year, there will be an offering of blended curriculum in grades K through 12, blending both the next generation Sunshine State standards, the state adopted standards, and Common Core state standards in English, language arts, and mathematics. Going on into years 14, 15, that's where the debate, I think, will actually start. And that debate has more to do not with the standards themselves, but actually the assessments.
Right. Superintendent Runcie, what is your best explanation for what Common Core is in the classroom for a parent sending their children off to school today?
Common Core gives us an opportunity to focus on the mastery of skill sets. What are those skill sets? The ability to analyze information, being able to think critically about it, and solve problems. And what it looks like in practice is parents and students can expect to see a lot more hands-on and what we would call project-based learning. So instead of continuing to do worksheets and just solving problems in a vacuum, we'll have real-world situations where you have to apply your knowledge to figure out how to solve a particular problem. And there's maybe multiple ways to do it. There's probably not a right or wrong way. We're going to certainly focus on a process. So it's an exciting time to get back to the basics of teaching and learning.
It's a real emphasis on application, on analysis, on explanation. And of course, it really changes also how teachers are doing their job. In fact, State Impact Florida's John O'Connor explains to us here on the Sunshine Economy how it changes how teachers teach.
Forget everything you know about school. That's how Cynthia Krim describes Common Core standards to teachers and parents. Krim is a teaching coach in Hillsborough County. She says the days of drilling math students on how to use a formula are over. Now, students have to show they understand the underlying concepts.
I try to tell them that anything you were comfortable doing as a kid and the procedures that you learned, it's the complete opposite of that. And it's a 180 from how we were taught it. And it's focused on just multiple ways to solve one problem.
Krim spent the summer training elementary math teachers about the new standards. At a recent session for about 300 teachers, Krim encourages them to be flexible about how a lesson unfolds. Don't simply tell students area is length times width and then have them do it 10 times. Ask them questions. Let them think. Make them figure it out.
As teachers, we're going to do these things. We're going to provide opportunities for investigations. We're going to have students explore different patterns. And we're going to be asking questions that really require students to think and discover patterns within numbers. You are going to have to be very strategic in what problems you're showing to your students for them to see patterns.
Krim says the most important question to ask students is why. It's a big change. Common Core has already come to kindergarten and first grade in Florida. Second graders make the transition this year, and starting next fall, every grade will use Common Core standards. There will be new standardized tests, too, with fewer multiple choice questions and more critical thinking required. At a Sarasota County training, English teachers break into small groups. They're writing a mission statement for how to teach reading. Common Core emphasizes using precise language. At one table, Venice High teachers Kathleen Jones and Larry Burke seek the right words.
So maybe something, a writing goal that deals with more text-based coupled with a text-based focus, writing to the text, because that's a huge part of this.
The class regroups and chooses this example. Comprehend any text by inferring and making real-world connections. Then they start rewriting to make it clearer. A second group of teachers comes in to edit the goal. They focus on the word connections.
We're doing less of that. How do I feel about the text? What connection can I make it to my life?
And another?
Text. And that could just be just about anything. You know what I mean? Literary or informational. Yeah.
The exercise gets teachers thinking about Common Core priorities and instruction techniques. Hillsborough County 5th grade math teacher Teresa Stillman likes that the standards provide a scaffold, which allows teachers to turn the lessons over to students.
I like to talk. I used to get in trouble in math for asking why and wanting to talk to people, and so I really understand kids wanting to do that too.
Students working in groups will teach each other how to solve a problem, compare notes, figure out more efficient solutions. Teachers say they'll have to think on their feet more during lessons, but many teachers at the sessions say they're looking forward to the challenge. In Tampa, I'm John O'Connor.
Superintendent Renzi, I'm wondering, you know, you're listening to this piece, you hear how one group of teachers are learning to teach the Common Core. How is your district preparing for teaching Common Core standards?
We've started the work towards Common Core maybe about 3 years ago, and we continue to move that through the entire district. Common Core is a journey. It's not necessarily a destination. It's going to take many years to get there, and we'll continue to refine where we are. It really is about a couple things. One, giving students an opportunity to take greater control of their own learning. And once students can, you know, figure out how they can manage their own learning, they're going to get to a whole different level of empowerment and confidence about their ability to transform their own lives. Number two, it's about relevance, right? So what we're learning, why am I actually doing this, right? How does this actually play out in a real world? Those connections have been absent from education for quite some time, and Common Core puts our schools, our classrooms in a better position to make sure the learning is relevant to real world experiences that our students are having.
There is a lot of enthusiasm that I've been hearing around Common Core from administrators and teachers and even from families. But I've heard from teachers every few years there is this new policy or this new curriculum that is going to save the future of education, that is going to give our kids what they deserve. How is this different?
It's really about a fundamental culture shift in how we conduct teaching and learning processes in our schools and classrooms.
Superintendent Robert Runcie of Broward County Public Schools, Superintendent Alberto Carvalho from Miami-Dade. Do you see it the same way, sir?
I do. What one should be asking should be, a number of decades ago, a high school diploma was a ticket to prosperity. Today, a high school diploma, unfortunately, it does not necessarily guarantee. And this is a child who may have fulfilled every one of the state's requirements for graduation, but that high school diploma may no longer guarantee college or career readiness. And I believe the Common Core does represent a set of standards, not a curriculum, a set of standards that mimic and replicate a real-world demand from a collegiate perspective, higher ed perspective, as well as a workforce perspective.
The odds of someone with solely a high school diploma being unemployed are twice that of the odds of somebody with an undergraduate degree from a college or university. We spoke with our Public Insight Network folks throughout the state of throughout the region of South Florida about the questions that they had about the Common Core standards and curriculum, and we did hear back from a parent.
My name is Galen Griegas. I have a bachelor's degree in education, a master's degree in psychology. I have 5 children, which I consider my PhD. And my oldest son is a professor at NYU. And my youngest son is 6 years old and just got out of kindergarten. My questions about Common Core really are about our corporations participating in this at a high level, not just like superficially understanding what are the corporations' needs, but are the corporations also willing to help and assist and support the educational process?
Superintendent Runcie in Fort Lauderdale with Broward County, you talked about the relevancy of Common Core to the real world. Are you seeing an embracement of these principles, of these standards, on the part of the ultimate consumer of the product of public schools, being the students?
Absolutely. And I'll just give you an example of a program in Broward, which we call LEO, Linking Education and Employment Opportunities. We partnered with Citrix, and we also have another technology partner that has come on, Motorola. They're working in a couple of our high schools, as well as a middle school, developing a technology-based curriculum where students will get certifications. They'll go through, they'll get their high school diploma. We've also brought in Broward College to provide some post-secondary opportunities, as well as help in developing the curriculum. The students will get internship, job exposure opportunities at Citrix and Motorola so they can begin to develop those soft skills that they need. And finally, the employees of those companies actually come into the schools and do some of the classes and lectures with the students and work with them. So when those students graduate, they not only have their high school diploma, they have industry certifications, they have some post-secondary courses under their belt, and they have real work experience.
We have more conversation with the superintendents of Miami-Dade and Broward County still to come here on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson with Sammy Mack. Join the conversation yourself ongoing on the website at WLRN.org and tweet us at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Still to come from the two superintendents, why they do not have confidence in the current state system to grade student performance.
I have at this point no faith that the state of Florida has the systems in place or the willingness to ensure a truly valid, reliable, transparent, honest way of depicting student achievement progress or being able to report adequately what that progress is.
This is the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. More of Florida's public school kids will be exposed to Common Core standards this year. The goals of the Common Core standards focus on analytical skills and explanation, knowing why they know something. Still, there's no clear measurement of effectiveness just yet, and there's a concern that the leaders of Broward County at school super... There's a concern that Broward County schools and Miami-Dade County school superintendents share.
I think that's a challenge that the state is facing, and it's not a challenge that's unique to Florida. I think the state of Florida has recognized that, number one, our readiness as a state for full implementation of computer-based testing to address Common Core is not there. The necessary ratio of computers to students who would be assessed is not what it should be. Their recommendation is one computer for every three students. Secondly, I would have to say my personal opinion, we should never be in a position of procuring and buying digital devices, computers, laptops, for the purpose of testing. If we're going to buy technology, it's for the purpose of supplementing instruction and supporting effective classroom environments. Secondly, I think there is a degree of disagreement over what that assessment should be, who produces it, its validity, its reliability, and whether or not it has been field tested sufficiently. I do not believe that the state has met all the criteria to, in fact, be able to launch that type of assessment. Florida initially has subscribed to PARC, and I don't think Florida now is in a position, in fact, to embrace PARC because of the reasons that I just described.
And PARC was one of the tests that a bunch of states were working on together that would be the Common Core test that many of the states in the consortium would have theoretically used, so you could compare tests from, say, Florida to New York or somewhere else.
Correct. I mean, the concept of uniform set of standards, not curriculum, standards, that then states, and there's a big distinction between standards and curriculums.
That's an interesting point. Sorry to interrupt, Superintendent, but we've used Common Core curriculum and we've used the phrase Common Core standards.
Right.
Curriculum, in my mind, and both my parents were public school teachers, curriculum is the coursework. It's the textbook you see. It's the lesson plans.
And it's even the way you teach it.
That's right. A standard is saying this is the goal that we want the students to be able to reach.
Exactly.
Comprehension,
right.
or whatever that may be.
Is and you've just debunked sort of the myth around and the confusion around Common Core standards. The Common Core standard, nobody's dictating how teachers will teach, the textbooks that will be adopted, the methodology of instruction takes place in districts and classrooms across America.
Superintendent Runcie, go ahead.
The way I kind of look at it is the standards say, look, these are what the expectations are in terms of the skills our students need. The curriculum is about how you get there. Common Core is not about dictating how you get there. It's just setting the goals.
Superintendent Alberto Carvalho of Miami-Dade County Public Schools, Robert Runcie, heads up the Broward County Public Schools as superintendent with us here on the Sunshine Economy. We're talking about Common Core standards. We're talking about measuring those standards and our Public Insight Network, connection of teachers and parents and other stakeholders in the community of public education, also have these same kinds of questions.
Hi, my name is Denise Stewart, and I'm a concerned parent, and I have two questions. The first question I'd like to ask is, what is this new test going to look like? And the second question I'd like to ask is, what type of formula will be used to compile the data scores and the school performance grades?
Superintendents, we've already described to some degree a lot of the questions that still remain about what this test looks like. And we've talked a lot about the procedures to get to that test, but it does get down to we're implementing these the Common Core in classrooms without an agreement yet on measuring that standard. Is that fair to say, Superintendent?
It is fair to say, and actually this year, and we ought to be honest about this, well, this past year the state has abysmally failed on its responsibility to ensure validity and reliability associated with the state accountability system. I've been a very strong voice against the insanity that we've seen with 39 different changes to the accountability system over 36 months, sometimes the goalposts being changed in the third quarter well after the school year had started without prior warning to teachers, to parents, to principals. Here's what we know about what the assessment will be, regardless of what exactly that assessment will be called or who will produce it. It will be, at least at some point, computer-based. Secondly, we know they will rely less on multiple-choice questions, will rely more on open-ended questions that require critical thinking and explanation of process. It will rely also less on theoretical questions, will rely more on practical situations for which the student will have to navigate and demonstrate how he or she arrived at those solutions. Regarding the second question that that I heard from the caller, that's a very legitimate question. I have at this point no faith that the state of Florida has the systems in place or the willingness to ensure a truly valid, reliable, transparent, honest way of depicting student achievement progress or being able to report adequately what that progress is. And at a time when student outcomes there are being measured or being used not only towards graduation of children and promotion, but also teacher evaluation and performance pay and ultimately their employment. I submit to you that I think we ought to be very careful about not making mistakes. And I think the state has rushed to simply getting it done rather than ensuring that it gets it done right.
So Superintendent Carvalho of Miami-Dade Public Schools, no confident in the public assessment of schools, which parents rely on and teachers rely on, obviously, and administrators rely on and regulators rely on. How about from Fort Lauderdale, Superintendent Runcie, any confidence in the state's ability to essentially grade the effectiveness of your employees that are headed back in the classroom today?
I agree with my colleague, Superintendent Carvalho. I have limited confidence in the state's ability to get there. What I see now is that we live in a very disconnected world where we're moving and advancing in the Common Core arena, but we have an accountability framework in this state that's anchored in FCAT, and that is a legacy system. It cannot appropriately be used to define where our students are in terms of developing and mastering the skills that we know they need to succeed in the 21st century. So that dichotomy needs to be resolved and some rational outcome needs to happen. And the impact on this, especially as we look forward towards how schools are actually graded, that teachers' compensation, their entire livelihood is based on this. This is a very, very serious matter, and these issues need to be resolved in short order.
That's Robert Runcie, the superintendent of Broward County Public Schools, joining in the conversation with Miami-Dade County Public Schools Superintendent Alberto Carvalho here on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson along with Sammy Mack. And Sammy, there's a robust conversation going on our website, WLRN.org, discussing Common Core, the costs of Common Core, and also the costs of testing, and really a lot of suspicion being voiced about testing in Common Core, but also just school testing in general.
Right. So the state of Florida currently spends about $12 on average per student on testing, and it's not clear yet what the test is going to cost when we switch to a test that reflects the Common Core. You can find out more about what these tests cost and about the Common Core at stateimpact.npr.org/Florida.
This is the Sunshine Economy, getting schooled, public education in South Florida on WLRN. Still to come, walking the hallway of a charter school with the CEO of one of the largest charter operators in the state.
We need to have a higher investment in education at this point that focuses on putting kids at the center of the model, hold it accountable, and then replicate what works.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Getting schooled, public education in South Florida. It is back to school for thousands, hundreds of thousands of kids, their parents, their guardians, and teachers, of course, across South Florida. Sammy Mack is along with me today.
Hey there. So about one out of every 17 public school kids in Florida attends a charter school. There are more than 500 throughout the state, including more than a dozen in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties that are managed by Charter Schools USA.
Yeah, one of those schools, Sammy, is Aventura City of Excellence School, obviously in Aventura in North Dade County. This is where I met Charter School CEO John Hage last week, as that school, like all of them, were getting ready for the new year. Walking the hallway with Hage and Principal Julie Alm. This charter school looks and sounds like a school building. The wide hallway, the bright overhead lights, cheerful colors. It should. After all, the building was built to be a school. It opened 11 years ago as a charter school, and Principal Alm has been there since the beginning.
Two kindergarten classrooms. We have six classrooms at each grade level, kinder through fifth grade. And then we have, of course, our middle school program from sixth to eighth grade.
Teachers were in their classrooms late last week when we visited, hanging borders around their bulletin boards, arranging supplies for the students, getting ready generally for the first day of class, and checking their classroom technology. It makes sense because, after all, technology is one of the areas that the charter school focuses its energies and financial resources on.
All of our classrooms have smart boards, document readers, in-house TV. In the middle school, we just recently got some Sharp TV, so technology is very rich.
996 students are signed up for Aventura City of Excellence School this year, kindergarten through eighth grade. There are more than 1,000 more who want to go to school there. They're on the wait list. Kids living in Aventura get preference when there is an open desk. During our walk through the hallway, we ran into the school's music director, Philip Lakowski. He was in the hallway, putting the finishing touches on a bulletin board that he described as part of his Common Core curriculum.
So describe to me how this fits into to your Common Core.
Well, the first thing you're seeing is a map of the United States. Obviously, you'd study that in geography. But we're going to be talking about math because we're going to talk about the ratios of how big things are to the, how to figure the scale. But we're also going to talk about songs from each of these places. With the song Route 66, we're getting that into the picture.
Well, if you ever plan to motor west, take my way, that's the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66.
And we're just trying to show how music fits into everything that we do, and also how music gives back to everything we do. They'll be able to learn a little about all the states just by singing the songs about them.
We head back to the principal's office to talk with the CEO of the company behind Aventura City of Excellence School, John Hage. You've got essentially a management agreement to help manage the resources of this school. You were paid just over $300,000 in fees last year. This school year, you'll be paid $279,000.
What does the school get for that money?
We work for the city here. So the city looks to us to provide efficiencies around hiring. So we do all the hiring. We do all the HR. We support financials, so we provide payroll services. We also provide a lot of curriculum and training support around the educational model.
$279,000 in management fees your firm will collect this year from the city, paid for by tax dollars, yes. Taxes of taxpayers throughout the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. What are they getting in return that they otherwise wouldn't if this were a normal public school run by Miami-Dade County Public Schools?
Fair question. So if you had to take in-house those costs, if you had to bring in an HR person to help you with hiring, if you had to bring in the payroll people, the accounting people, the curriculum support, and those kind of people, it could easily cost $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. The benefit is being a part of a bigger network. So what we do is we're able to share those costs across a lot of schools.
So the question becomes accountability about this between elected local officials that would be running the school board and making those kinds of financial decisions, or a private corporation, a for-profit corporation that is scattered to some degree here in Florida, the state of Indiana, Illinois, and other locations throughout the country.
Yeah, I think accountability actually benefits this model. And let me give you an example. In a traditional school system, you have one elected school board, right? That school board has to oversee, in the case of Dade County, hundreds of schools, tens of thousands of employees, and even hundreds of thousands of students. In this case, you have one board for this school. In that board, you have elected members. You have the city of Aventura, who are elected to oversee not only the city, but in this case, this school. Then they hire someone like me to help administrate and support that school, bring in professional services, and do so at a competitive bid process. And then what you have is you have parents in this school making a decision to either go to this school or not. And they're voting with their kids literally every day. Do I go back to Aventura or do I not go back to Aventura Charter School of Excellence? And I think what that means is that the accountability for us is literally at a very local level. Here, I have one budget for one school where we're looking at each dollar. Do we buy that computer or do we put it in teacher pay or do we put it into these books? Where do we put those resources is really important.
Is Charter Schools USA involved with allocating that budget dollar? I mean, this was a school that had revenues of $7.3 million in last school year, $6.5 million that came from state taxpayers.
Well, the first thing is that our fee is set and it's locked in. So we don't make more or less based on any budgetary decision. So there's no incentive for us to say, hey, let's make sure that we don't spend money here. Somehow it's going to benefit us. No matter what the budget is, whether there's a surplus or there's a deficit, our fee is set based on performance each year, which has criteria. So we have to hit academic standards, financial outcomes, those kind of things. Secondly, what happens in the room is this. The resources that are allocated, which are usually limited, right? $6,300 in Florida is low. I just got back from Louisiana. We have four schools out there. They're getting about $9,500 a kid in Louisiana, okay? Florida's reimbursement rates are low. They should be higher, in my opinion. I think it's a low reimbursement state. The way that I see it working is at the ground floor level, teachers are looking at their use of limited resources and the best outcome for kids. And if they're getting results using a software that we know costs X amount of money, then that's going to be at the high end of the reimbursement rate, and let's invest there. If you're not getting results there, the change in the budget is very quick. It's almost immediate. In other words, you'll say, look, we didn't get results there last year. We know that teachers aren't using this software. Let's not go back and buy it next year. And by the way, we need to put that into this other program that we do know works.
But is that a Charter Schools USA decision that's being made at that level with the management fee?
No, it isn't. It's made with the board, but mostly at the teacher and principal level.
The way you lay it out, your management fee is fixed. So you need to manage your internal costs, not your external costs. Is that fair to say?
Right. In other words, we're focused on making sure that if we get a small fee, in this case, this school pays, relatively small fee for the size of the school, is that what happens is we take those resources, put it into the overall bucket, and make sure I have enough people to support it, just like any other enterprise would.
John, let me ask you, as you've built this company and continued to grow Charter Schools USA, who's your customer?
So the customer is the parent. First and foremost, they're not the only customer, but they're the first customer in my mind. Student is at the end of the day, the service we're providing is to make sure we have highly educated citizens that can give back to society. They can do more than just learn. They've got to be good, productive citizens. So we do a lot around character education.
Who is your competitor? Who do you consider
your competition?
I think every school is in a friendly competitive position. I don't think it has to be an ugly competitive position, but I have to be honest about it. The fact of the matter is, when you have a choice program, people are competing for those students to come to their school. There's definitely some dislocation. There's definitely some failure. There's definitely going to be some downside to change. I'll never sit here and whitewash it and say, hey, wow, charter schools are the end-all, be-all. Every charter school is great. It's just not true, right? There are some great ones, and there's some really bad ones, and they need to be shut down.
Public schools may be having a different standard because they are public, because the greater community sees that there's no profit motive at play.
If you ever talk to the parents, they'll actually say, we don't care. You know what they care about? Do I have a great school? What they want to know is, are they getting a high-quality product? Is the student the center of the enterprise value, or is it something else? The charter model is competing with everyone and itself.
Many leaders whom we've spoken to on this radio program, and I asked them about the quality of the local workforce, and they'll say that it's lacking. And that's in manufacturing, it's in service industry, it's in hospitality, almost across the board. What's your response back to that local business leader who is looking to grow the local economy, looking for local hires, but winds up having to bring people from outside in?
So I would hope that they would see the innovation as a good thing in this charter K-12 world, that this is a way to actually drive higher quality employees eventually. It takes time.
Hage may be familiar for those following education in Florida. He was the director of research for Governor Jeb Bush's Foundation for Florida's Future, helping shape the original charter school law in the state.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, Getting Schooled, Public Education in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson with Sammy Mack in a robust conversation happening on the website at WLRN.org. And Sammy, an interesting question. We were talking to the superintendents of Broward and Dade County about preparing students for the job force in the future. What about today's job force, and especially as it comes to public education? One listener posting on the website at WLRN.org, if I have a BA in mathematics and a master's degree in mathematics and have been teaching for 22 years, why is it so difficult to find a teaching job? You know, some frustration about the general employment in teaching. And according to the state of Florida, the actual number of employed teachers for elementary and secondary schools in the private education field actually dropping in the month of July compared to June. They don't split out public school teaching, but you look at local government employment, and that's been dropping as well over the past several months.
And those are summertime numbers. We'll have a much better picture of school hiring when we get the August and September numbers back. Still to come, how much of their own money do teachers invest in their classrooms?
I've spent over $200 just at the beginning of this school year, which hasn't even started yet, on those supplies that will make activities more engaging for my kids.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, Getting Schooled, Public Education in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. Students aren't the only ones focused on grades in Florida, so are teachers. They're focused on the grades of students and of their own schools. School performance grades were a big topic last week at Sun Life Stadium when about 400 United Teachers of Dade union members held a pep rally of sorts. The state's school A through F grading system formula has been in the spotlight this summer. First, state officials made last-minute changes, preventing more than 150 schools from dropping to F grades. And one of the loudest voices against the A through F system has been Randy Weingarten. She's head of the American Federation of Teachers, the national umbrella organization over the teachers' unions in South Florida. She and I sat down to talk about Florida's accountability systems.
It's not surprising that people try to take what are very, very, very complex things and simplify them. And so it was a brilliant stroke for Jeb Bush initially to say, we're going to make everything about a grade, and that would be the Florida accountability system. But underlying that accountability system are several fallacious principles. It was supposedly premised on test scores and improvement and growth. And we're seeing that that wasn't the case. The Miami Herald, for example, recently has shown that the ABCDF paradigm essentially said if you were in a wealthy district or kids were wealthier, their schools did really well. Kids that are poorer the schools did not. Essentially, contrary to what was stated about this process, it wasn't about improvement, it wasn't about growth, it was about poverty. And now what we see through the revelation about Tony Bennett in Indiana, plus the series of revelations about how Florida's scores or grades seem to have nothing to do with what kids are learning in classrooms, that no one trusts the system.
You're talking about Tony Bennett. Our education commissioner just resigned. The Associated Press obtained emails from Tony Bennett when he was chief in Indiana showing that he had asked his staff to change the A to F formula that he was introducing there so that a particular charter school run by one of his donors would receive an A grade. Some other schools benefited from this as well. How does that impact the way the A to F grading systems are seen around the country?
It gives it a heavy-duty dose of distrust, because when you cook books like this to promote a donor and then go out and say that it fits in terms of your narrative, why would anybody trust the accountability system ever again?
At a state level, Florida has had 3 full-time and 3 interim, so 6 people total, in the position of education commissioner in just, 3 years? What does that say about the state of Florida and its education system?
It's saying that there's some serious readjustment that has to happen. The system that was created, the lack of investment into schools, this constant blaming and shaming and premising everything not on what's right for a kid, but on a test score, may have nothing to do with what kids need to know and be able to do. And I think what you're seeing is through whether people are resigning or whether there were disclosures, like in Bennett's case, that the State Department of Education actually can't do what the rhetoric set them up to do. But what it's really saying to the legislature and to the governor is stop listening to Jeb Bush with these magic potions or with the sense that all responsibility can be shifted only onto the backs of individual teachers.
In 2011, Governor Rick Scott cut a little over $1 billion from the education budget in Florida. And in this past year and a half, he has put a lot more money back into education. This past session, he put in an additional $1 billion into the budget. He has set aside $480 million for teacher bonuses. What do you make of this happening in Florida now?
2 things are happening. Scott sees the error of his ways. Politically, he sees it because not doing very well in the polls. But more important than that, parents and teachers in community after community want the investment in public schools. Education is a really hard job, and teachers need to be paid a competitive rate. If we want to get the best and the brightest and keep the best and the brightest, we need to actually treat teachers like they do in Finland or Singapore, where it is a real middle-class job.
That's Randy Weingarten. She is the head of the American Federation of Teachers, speaking to our Sammy Mack here on the Sunshine Economy, tackling public education in South Florida. And you know, Sammy, beyond the politics of education policy really lies the heart of it, right? Paperwork, assignment sheets, books, supplies in the classroom. And on WLRN.org, one listener posting this question: with computers dominating our lives, why are the children not learning to type?
This is a great question, and it's one that I've heard from educators in the past. And there is sort of this assumption that kids at this point are digital natives, they know how to type, but there are actually a lot of kids out there who don't have access to computers and internet at home. And there's some question: when we change from the FCAT to whatever the next test is, it's going to be computer-based. And there's some question about whether or not typing is actually going to put kids at a disadvantage if they can't type as quickly as some of their peers.
And we heard some of those big reservations from the leaders of 2 of the largest public school districts in the United States, based here in South Florida: Robert Runcie of Broward County Schools, Alberto Carvalho of Miami-Dade Public Schools, earlier here on the Sunshine Economy. But if teachers, of course, have a lot invested in their classrooms, and some of it comes right out of their own pockets.
Hello, my name is Sanjay Allen. I am a third grade teacher at Westview Elementary School. I have so far spent maybe $150 buying crayons, composition books, loose leaf paper, rulers, highlighters, coloring pencils. If it's not there, you need to have it. If you're an effective teacher, you can't work without the materials that the students are required. So either they buy it themselves, and sometimes that doesn't happen, or you have to purchase it for them.
My name is Charmaine Durant, and I teach at Charles Drew K-8 Center for the Performing Arts, and I teach second grade. I have invested at least about $250 already on buying borders and the normal supplies that you have to start off the year with.
I am Cheryl Collier. I teach second grade gifted students at Leawood K-8 Center in Kendall. Although Dade County does a wonderful job with giving us what we need in terms of bare necessities for the children, I've spent over $200 just at the beginning of this school year, which hasn't even started yet, on those supplies that will make activities more engaging for my kids. I'm going into my 26th year. You have to give kids more. You know, they come in eager. Their parents trust us with them for 7-plus hours a day. And you give them what you want your own kid to have.
My name is Sheldon Wilson. I'm a history teacher at Herbert Emmons Middle School. Over the course of the entire year, I may spend roughly $500 out of my pocket every year. And students don't realize that at times they feel that it magically appears. A lot of materials are subsidized by the teachers themselves.
For more than a decade, Florida public school teachers have gotten a stipend to help pay for classroom supplies. Usually teachers see the money show up in their paychecks early in the school year. This year, Governor Scott introduced a debit card for teachers to use, but only a couple of the state's school districts have signed up for it.
Still to come here on the Sunshine Economy with Public Education in South Florida, what one teacher wants the community to know about the work behind the desk. This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. After the school bell rings, the hallways fall silent, classrooms are filled, and there begins the formal work of educators. Jeremy Glazer is a former public school teacher who has been writing a series of essays for State Impact Florida we're calling Classroom Contemplations.
Teaching is the hardest job I've ever had. In the midst of all the talk about schools and education policy, ultimately the classroom doors close and we, the teachers, are the ones in there with the children. We are the ones who think every day about those kids for the whole school year and for years after. I remember Catherine, the first student who walked into my classroom 17 years ago. I remember Ashley, who used to drive his desk around until I had an epiphany and told him to park, and he did. I remember Elvia, who wrote in a story, "The trees were sprayed with the scent of wonderful." I remember Denver, who died, shot while he was skipping my class. They are all in my head, and if I did my job, I'm in theirs. Our classrooms are places where learning can happen, where children can flourish, but they can't be the only place, and we cannot do it alone. We need your help. If a child can't read well, don't just blame the teachers. Help us surround her with books and with people who read. If a child can't do math, don't just blame the teachers. Help us introduce him to the music of numbers. And please, help us teach your children to think critically, by thinking critically yourself. There are no quick, easy answers. Ignore anyone who tells you that there are. Good education is time-consuming, and it is expensive. And it is what all our children deserve.
Jeremy Glazer has taught in a variety of schools and neighborhoods, including right here in South Florida in Miami. He has worked in local government, and he'll be starting a doctoral program in curriculum studies. In teacher education, that will happen at Stanford University, he wants to focus on amplifying the voice of teachers in the debate over education policy. Coming up next Monday here on the Sunshine Economy, join us. We tackle the reality of retail in South Florida. We like to buy stuff, a lot of stuff. Finally, it doesn't matter if you work in a school or not, even if you have school-age kids, education certainly matters to all of our businesses. Whether it's the city of Davie, down near Tamiami, or Florida City, which can be mighty, mighty pretty. That's the Sunshine Economy for Sammy Mack on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
Now you go to St. Louis and Joplin, Missouri, and Oklahoma.
Thank you.